Chapter 36. Nobody could say I had touched any of it, or gone near it, but a fellow came running into the shop out of the street, and laid hands on me in a furious manner, in the very moments, while I was calling for the people of the house, that if he had really had a mind to have done his neighbor any service, he should have stood at a distance, and silently watched to see whether I had touched anything or no, and then have clapped in upon me, and taken me in the fact. That is very true, apostrophe says Mr. Alderman, and turning to the fellow that stopped me, he asked him if it was true that I knocked with my foot. He said, yes, I had knocked, but that might be because of his coming. Nay, apostrophe says the alderman, taking him short, now you contradict yourself, for just now you said she was in the shop with her back to you, and did not see you till you came upon her. Apostrophe now it was true, that my back was partly to the street, but yet as my business was of a kind, that required me to have my eyes every way, so I really had a glance of him running over, as I said before, though he did not perceive it. After a full hearing, the alderman gave it as his opinion, that his neighbor was under a mistake, and that I was innocent, and the goldsmith acquiesced in it too, and his wife, and so I was dismissed. But as I was going to depart, Mr. Alderman said, but hold, madam, if you were designing to buy spoons, I hope you will not let my friend here lose his customer by the mistake. Apostrophe I readily answered, no, sir, I'll buy the spoon still, if he can match my odd spoon, which I brought for a pattern. And the goldsmith showed me some of the very same fashion. So he weighed the spoons, and they came to 5 and 30 shillings, so I pulls out my purse to pay him, in which I had near 20 guineas, for I never went without such a sum about me, whatever might happen, and I found it of use at other times as well as now. When Mr. Alderman saw my money, he said, well, madam, now I am satisfied you were wronged, and it was for this reason that I moved you should buy the spoons, and stayed till you had bought them, for if you had not had money to pay for them, I should have suspected that you did not come into the shop with an intent to buy, for indeed the sort of people who come upon these designs that you have been charged with are seldom troubled with much gold in their pockets, as I see you are. Apostrophe, I smiled, and told his worship that then I owed something of his favor to my money, but I hoped he saw reason also in the justice he had done me before. He said, yes, he had, but this had confirmed his opinion, and he was fully satisfied now of my having been injured. So I came off with flying colors, though from an affair in which I was at the very brink of destruction. It was but 3 days after this, that not at all made cautious by my former danger, as I used to be, and still pursuing the art which I had so long been employed in, I ventured into a house, where I saw the doors open, and furnished myself, as I though verily without being perceived, with 2 pieces of flowered silks, such as they call brocaded silk, very rich. It was not a mercer's shop, nor a warehouse of a mercer, but looked like a private dwelling house, and was, it seems, inhabited by a man that sold goods for the weavers to the mercers, like a broker or factor. That I may make short of this black part of this story, I was attacked by 2 wenches that came open-mouthed at me just as I was going out at the door, and one of them pulled me back into the room, while the other shut the door upon me. I would have given them good words, but there was no room for it. 2 fiery dragons could not have been more furious than they were. They tore my clothes, bullied and roared, as if they would have murdered me. The mistress of the house came next, and then the master, and all outrageous, for a while especially. I gave the master very good words, told him the door was open, and things were a temptation to me, that I was poor and distressed, and poverty was when many could not resist, and begged him with tears, to have pity on me. the mistress of the house, was moved with compassion, and inclined to have let me go, and had almost persuaded her husband to it also, but the saucy wenches were run, even before they were sent, and had fetched a constable, and then the master said he could not go back, I must go before a justice, and answered his wife, that he might come into trouble himself, if he should let me go. The sight of the constable, indeed, struck me with terror, and I thought I should have sunk into the ground. I fell into faintings, and indeed the people themselves thought I would have died, when the woman argued again for me, and entreated her husband, seeing they had lost nothing, to let me go. I offered him to pay for the 2 pieces, whatever the value was, though I had not got them, and argued that as he had his goods, and had really lost nothing, it would be cruel to pursue me to death, and have my blood for the bare attempt of taking them. I put the constable in mind, that I had broke no doors, nor carried anything away, and when I came to the justice, and pleaded there, that I had neither broken anything to get in, nor carried anything out, the justice was inclined to have released me. But the first saucy jade that stopped me, affirming that I was going out with the goods, but that she stopped me, and pulled me back as I was upon the threshold, the justice upon that point committed me, and I was carried to Newgate. That horrid place, my very blood chills at the mention of its name, the place where, so many of my comrades, had been locked up, and from whence they went to the fatal tree, the place where my mother suffered so deeply, where I was brought into the world, and from whence I expected, no redemption but by an infamous death. To conclude, the place that had so long expected me, and which with, so much art and success I had so long avoided. I was not fixed indeed. 'Tis impossible to describe the terror of my mind, when I was first brought in, and when I looked around upon all the horrors of that dismal place. I looked on myself as lost, and that I had nothing to think of, but of going out of the world, and that with the utmost infamy. The hellish noise, the roaring, swearing, and clamor, the stench and nastiness, and all the dreadful crowd of afflicting things, that I saw there, joined together to make the place seem an emblem of hell itself, and a kind of an entrance into it. Now I reproached myself with the many hints I had had, as I have mentioned above, from my own reason, from the sense of my good circumstances, and of the many dangers I had escaped, to leave off while I was well, and how I had withstood them all, and hardened my thoughts against all fear. It seemed to me, that I was hurried on by an inevitable, and unseen fate to this day of misery, and that now I was to expiate all my offenses at the gallows, that I was now to give satisfaction to justice with my blood, and that I was come to the last hour of my life, and of my wickedness together. These things poured themselves in upon my thoughts in a confused manner, and left me overwhelmed with melancholy and despair. Though I repented heartily of all my life past, but that repentance yielded me no satisfaction, no peace, no, not in the least, because, as I said to myself, it was repenting after the power of further sinning was taken away. I seemed not to mourn that I had committed such crimes, and for the fact as it was an offense against God and my neighbor, but I mourned that I was to be punished for it. I was a penitent, as I thought, not that I had sinned, but that I was to suffer, and this took away all the comfort, and even the hope of my repentance in my own thoughts. I got no sleep for several nights or days, after I came into that wretched place, and glad I would have been for some time to have died there, though I did not consider dying as it ought to be considered neither. Indeed, nothing could be filled with more horror to my imagination than the very place, nothing was more odious to me than the company that was there. Oh, if I had but been sent to any place in the world, and not to Newgate, I should have thought myself happy. In the next place, how did the hardened wretches that were there before me triumph over me? What? Mrs. Flanders come to Newgate at last? What? Mrs. Mary, Mrs. Molly, and after that plain Moll Flanders? They thought the devil had helped me, they said, that I had reigned so long. They expected me there many years ago, and was I come at last? Then they flouted me with my dejections, welcomed me to the place, wished me joy, bid me have a good heart, not to be cast down, things might not be so bad as I feared, and the like, then called for brandy, and drank to me, but put it all up to my score, for they told me I was but just come to the college, as they called it, and sure I had money in my pocket, though they had none. I asked one of this crew how long she had been there. She said 4 months. I asked her how the place looked to her when she first came into it. Just as it did now to you, apostrophe says she, dreadful and frightful, that she thought she was in hell, and I believe so still, apostrophe at she, but it is natural to me now, I don't disturb myself about it. Apostrophe I suppose, apostrophe says I, you are in no danger of what is to follow? Apostrophe apostrophe nay, apostrophe says she, for you are mistaken there, I assure you, for I am under sentence, only I pleaded my belly, but I am no more with child than the judge that tried me, and I expect to be called down next sessions. Apostrophe this calling down is calling down to their former judgment, when a woman has been respited for her belly, but proves not to be with child, or if she has been with child, and has been brought to bed. Well, apostrophe says I, are you thus easy? Eh, says she, I can't help myself, what signifies being sad? If I am hanged, there's an end of me, apostrophe says she. And away she turns dancing, and sings as she goes the following piece of Newgate wit, if I swing by the string I shall hear the bell ring, and then there's an end of poor Jenny. Apostrophe, I mention this, because it would be worth the observation of any prisoner, who shall hereafter fall into the same misfortune, and come to that dreadful place of Newgate, how time, necessity, and conversing with the wretches that are there familiarizes the place to them, how at last they become reconciled to that which at first was the greatest dread upon their spirits in the world, and are as impudently cheerful and merry in their misery as they were when out of it. I cannot say, as some do, this devil is not so black as he is painted. For indeed no colors can represent the place to the life, not any soul can see aright of it, but those who have been sufferers there. But how hell should become by degree so natural, and not only tolerable, but even agreeable, is a thing unintelligible, but by those who have experienced it, as I have. The same night that I was sent to Newgate, I sent the news of it to my old governess, who was surprised at it, you may be sure, and spent the night almost as ill out of Newgate as I did in it. The next morning she came to see me. She did what she could to comfort me, but she saw that was to no purpose. However, as she said, to sink under the weight was but to increase the weight. She immediately applied herself to all the proper methods to prevent the effects of it, which we feared, and first she found out the two fiery jades that had surprised me. She tampered with them, offered them money, and, in a word, tried all imaginable ways to prevent a prosecution. She offered one of the wenches number 100 to go away from her mistress, and not to appear against me, but she was so resolute that though she was but a servant maid at number 3 a year wages or thereabouts, she refused it, and would have refused it, as my governess said she believed, if she had offered her number 500. Then she attacked the other maid. She was not so hard-hearted in appearance as the other, and sometimes seemed inclined to be merciful. But the first wench kept her up, and changed her mind, and would not so much as let my governess talk with her, but threatened to have her up for tampering with the evidence. Then she applied to the master, that is to say, the man whose goods had been stolen, and particularly to his wife, who, as I told you, was inclined at first to have some compassion for me. She found the woman the same still, but the man alleged he was bound by the justice that committed me to prosecute, and that he should forfeit his recognizance. My governess offered to find friends that should get his recognizances off of the file, as they call it, and that he should not suffer, but it was not possible to convince him that could be done, or that he could be safe any way in the world, but by appearing against me, So I was to have three witnesses of fact against me, the master and his two mates. That is to say, I was as certain to be cast for my life as I was certain that I was alive, and I had nothing to do but to think of dying and prepare for it. I had but a sad foundation to build upon, as I said before, for all my repentance appeared to me to be only the effect of my fear of death, not a sincere regret for the wicked life that I had lived, and which had brought this misery upon me, for the offending my Creator, who was now suddenly to be my judge. I lived many days here under the utmost horror of soul. I had death, as it were, in view, and thought of nothing night and day, but of gibbets and halters, evil spirits and devils. It is not to be expressed by words how I was harassed, between the dreadful apprehensions of death, and the terror of my conscience reproaching me with my past horrible life. The ordinary of Newgate came to me, and talked a little in his way, but all his divinity ran upon confessing my crime, as he called it, though he knew not what I was in for, making a full discovery, and the like, without which he told me God would never forgive me, and he said so little to the purpose, that I had no manner of consolation from him. And then to observe the poor creature preaching confession and repentance to me in the morning, and find him drunk with brandy and spirits by noon, this had something in it so shocking, that I began to nauseate the man more than his work, and his work too by degrees, for the sake of the man, so that I desired him to trouble me no more. I know not how it was, but by the indefatigable application of my diligent governess I had no bill preferred against me the first sessions, I mean to the grand jury, at Guildhall. So I had another month or 5 weeks before me, and without doubt this ought to have been accepted by me, as so much time given me for reflection upon what was past, and preparation for what was to come. Or, in a word, I ought to have esteemed it as a space given me for repentance, and have employed it as such, but it was not in me. I was sorry, as before, for being in Newgate, but had very few signs of repentance about me. On the contrary, like the waters in the cavities and hollows of mountains, which petrify and turn into stone, whatever they are suffered to drop on, so the continual conversing with such a crew of hellhounds as I was, had the same common operation upon me, as upon other people. I degenerated into stone. I turned first stupid and senseless, then brutish and thoughtless, and at last raving mad as any of them were. And, in short, I became as naturally pleased and easy with the place, as if indeed I had been born there. It is scarce possible to imagine that our natures should be capable of so much degeneracy, as to make that pleasant and agreeable, that in itself is the most complete misery. Here was a circumstance that I think it is scarce possible to mention a worse. I was as exquisitely miserable as, speaking of common cases, it was possible for anyone to be that had life and health, and money to help them, as I had. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.